This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Blue Monday podcast with me, Richard Woodward, and joining me from The Guardian, a football journalist and lifelong Town fan slash sufferer, I guess, Nick Ames. Nick, morning to you. It's been a momentous week. How are you, how's it been for you? Busy, I guess?
It's been pretty exhausting. I have to say, when I got the heads up on Wednesday that this was probably going to break within sort of 40, 45 minutes, so I already had quite a busy day on, and I was like, I'm so excited, but sort of not today, please. I mean, it happened, and obviously, you know, from a fan personal perspective, and also from a professional one, you are buzzing at a story like that. So I very much join everyone else in sort of their mind wandering to how it's all going to pan out and what might be over the next few years.
Yeah, so we'll have a bit of chat about that. Interesting to understand any chronology that you and any insights that you've got. Obviously, we were just saying that you kind of had to put Ipswich Town down briefly. You cover Premier League, particularly Arsenal and London clubs, is it? So you were at Arsenal last night and Fulham later on. So we'll give you a little bit of time to digest the Ipswich Town news, and we're grateful for your time. I guess the first thing that I kind of wanted to throw onto the screen, and for those listening, Nick wrote an article for The Guardian, was it December? Last year, 2020, wasn't it? Paul Lambert battles for Ipswich future at a ghost club in a rapid decline. And that chimed with the majority of the fan base. I assume you got lots of likes and retweets and interaction on Twitter. That must have been a hard thing to write. It was a hard thing to read, seeing that 13 years of, I guess what we can call it now, is chronic mismanagement, isn't it? Mm. As context for the takeover, your feelings kind of writing that article must have been really tough.
Yeah, it was tough, and it was one of those, I think I said at the time, where I have to pick my moments to write about Town, obviously, because it is a national platform, and we can't be covering the ins and outs every week. But I picked that particular moment because I personally had enough, and I could read the room and see that it was a bit of a tipping point that we'd reached for everybody, for everyone watching this, no doubt. So I wrote that piece just to sum up where the club was at, how it had got there, and also the fact, and I said this at the end of the piece, that it is a club with a lot going for it that maybe we don't shout about enough, and people in Ipswich don't shout about enough. I very much believe that, and that it could and should be better. So I wrote that at the time, and I was actually bowled over by, not only the response from Town fans, when I looked at our internal figures at The Guardian of who wrote the piece, it was huge, and that's not because of anything I did. It is because Ipswich, and I find this whenever I write about Town, is a name people still want to know about. It's the name that resonates with people, especially if you're over 25, 30 anyway. And and the figures were big. So that all made me think, okay, if a positive change can happen here at town, there is a lot to work with. And, you know, what did I want to get out of that article? I guess I wanted people more widely.
Therapy?
To think, it was a bit of therapy, but also to make people more widely think about the situation that town had found themselves in as well. And, you know, it's easy to say with hindsight, a lot of things now, given that the takeovers happened, but maybe part of you is thinking, oh, maybe an interested party is going to read this and think, oh, yeah, this is a hell of a project. And as it was, that was totally unnecessary because something was firmly in the works that absolutely none of us knew about. But yeah, there was a bit of catharsis. It had to be written. I think at the time somebody had to do it. And I could have gone in much harder, by the way, in certain places, you know, I think. But yeah, looking back now, it's quite funny that piece went out and 5 months later, 4 months later, we're sat here having this conversation.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost like a prospectus, Nick, because you're right. You've done the light and the shades, because the light is talking about the history, the size of the stadium, the size of the catchment area, the academy, and clearly those were the things that perhaps swayed the folks at Game Changer Limited, Game Changer 20 Limited, to use their full name, and those are things that they've talked about subsequently as well. So, just to dwell on Marcus Evans briefly, it may be a bit of therapy and catharticness, if that's the word, to look back on that one. I mean, your article, to go on to the dark, we spoke to Jim White a few months ago. He did a similar article, and when, you know, someone like Jim who's you know, he's been in your industry for a few decades now, hasn't he, and is quite a voice of authority and hasn't got any skin in the game when it comes to Ipswich, when he's saying similar things as well, you know, that makes people stand up and take notice. How would you sum up the Marcus Evans era? Because it started I've always said it started with good intentions, and perhaps the reality dawned and the task at hand was probably just too big for him, wasn't it?
I think you pretty well summed it up there. Honestly, I'm not gonna go down the road of personally criticizing Evans. I think his intentions were good. I think they still are good. And I think ultimately now one way that I might judge him is in the hands that he's chosen to leave the club in for the future, which he has made quite a big deal of saying is a painstaking process for him. I gather he's had at least 40 approaches for the club in his hometown, and he's chosen this one. So and trusted it enough to keep a 5% share himself. So, you know, if he's chosen the right custodianship, then that will be a redeeming feature from whatever happened before. I think overall it's been a massive disappointment. Massive disappointment. Town has become, hopefully will no longer be, a shell of a club without the right infrastructure to compete, certainly top half championship or higher. It was, and I think Stuart Watson has said this phrase many times, death by a thousand cuts. I think Evans, you know, could only put a certain amount of money in, which he did out of his own pocket and kept the club afloat in many ways. But I think there was no real drive to make town smarter off the pitch, to sort of look at where we can invest, even if it's not in big transfer fees, big players, to make that difference that other clubs have done. There was scant investment in personnel, in the infrastructure that was eroded. And in the end, that you're left in a place where you're just running to catch up and hoping that you've got some way of holding it all together. And Mick McCarthy did that. And I'm sure this has all been spoken about at length many times. And after Mick left, you're then exposing a total lack of structure that depends on a very strong figure, strong manager to hold it all together. We didn't have that in Paul Hurst. Didn't ultimately have it in Paul Lambert. I thought we might. I thought we would, actually. I was wrong. I thought Paul Lambert was going to keep Town up, and I thought things were going to get a lot better, and they didn't. So I was completely wrong. And then Paul Cook, I think, is a bit more out of the Mick McCarthy mould, I think. Not necessarily in terms of football style, but in terms of personality and gravitas. And maybe it could work. Maybe it would have worked in the short term with the Paul Cook, Marcus Evans axis. But the club had to move on. It's got to the point where we had to move on. And we can pick over every little aspect of it. But I think overall, it's been a failure. I think it's been a well-intentioned failure.
Yeah. It's interesting. And yeah, you know, I'll put your the screenshot of your article just up here as well from earlier in the week. Ipswich entered a new era with £40 million takeover by Game Changer 20. And you've mentioned Derby there as well. And interesting to get your take on other transactions and how this one might compare. When did you first become aware of this? Was it a similar time to everyone else, kind of in kind of mid to late February, wasn't it? It started, you didn't get any early inklings from anywhere else?
Very, very similar timing. I'm obviously the three outlets that probably reported it was The Athletic and TWTD and ourselves, and I think my report went out last. So I had a good indication that week from someone who I trust and who should know that it had got to an advanced stage, a very advanced stage. But you're not going to run a piece like that without sourcing it severally. So I didn't quite have the way to make every jigsaw piece fit. Matt Slater, our outstanding journalist, brilliant colleague, did run a fantastic story, which was right. Phil on TWTD did as well. And over that weekend, I asked a lot of questions and managed to work out for myself that, okay, this had got to a very late stage. It was probably with the EFL for ratification on their table. And I was confident enough by that Monday morning that I knew it was probably going to happen. So ran that story. And after that, for the subsequent month, it was one of those where no one's really going to give you a running commentary on a deal like this, or at least you're very lucky if you're going to get one. And I wasn't lucky enough. So there was a lot going around about maybe it's stalled, maybe it hasn't, maybe this and maybe that. But everyone that I was calling was just saying, it's the same. Nothing new, nothing new. And in my head, as long as it's nothing new, it's not off, is it? And, you know, and within that, there can be ups and downs and oscillations and people, you know,
land registry searches and the like.
Yeah. Exactly. So I was always fairly confident that as long as no one told me it was off, it was on. And then obviously there was a lot of speculation over the weekend, which largely came from message board forums and the like. And I probably only got the heads up that, which made me think, oh, hang on a minute, about 45, 50 minutes before it happened on Wednesday. And then by that time, I wasn't at all surprised to see the announcement at 11. But I'd be lying if I said there was some drip running commentary of information coming between when I first was confident it was going to happen and when it broke. You're basically sitting tight and hoping no one tells you it's off.
We kind of, before we started recording, we kind of speculated what the situation was in February, because it was kind of a big bang kind of moment rather than, you know, the drip feed, as you say. It suddenly was, there's this takeover, it's looking like to happen. There was a little bit of the hiatus. Did you find that a little bit strange that, you know, you mentioned Matt Slater, you know, it was all kind of, it went from naught to 100 pretty quick, didn't it? And then obviously the cooling off bit. We can only speculate as to why that might be, but was that a negotiation tactic partly perhaps on one side of the table, or was it, I mean, we know now that it's been 14 months in the works, so perhaps someone went a little bit early. Any thoughts on what that might be? Obviously, don't feel free to put your hands, your flag to the mask if you don't want to.
There'll be an element of speculation. I know that the Game Changer side of it were concerned about stuff getting out, because I think if too much did, there was, you know, Marcus Evans, as Mike O'Leary said in the press conference a couple of days ago, is a very wealthy man and could just walk away if he feels he's not being treated correctly in a deal and it's not being treated with the respect required and that kind of thing. So I think there was a lot of caution on that side, and it might be, and I don't know, that, you know, that on Marcus's side, he wasn't that happy when bits started dripping out a month or so ago. I don't know. I also know that the ratification process from the EFL is a very variable feast. And I was told, again, by people close to the situation a month or so ago, you know, this could take days or it could take several weeks or a couple of months, partly because of the COVID situation. And as we know, in every part of life at the moment, everything is that bit more fiddly and takes a bit longer. So there could also have been an element of that where something that should have taken a fortnight took a month. I'm mainly speculating, to be honest.
I think we all are. Very few people maybe have got a seat around the table and know the truth on that one. So moving on to Game Changer 20 Limited and ORG, what's your stance on pension funds owning football clubs or owning majority stakes in football clubs? Does it increase the pressure to succeed? Does it increase the likelihood of, you know, very, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess it puts a lot of pressure on the success, doesn't it? I can't say any better than that. You know, are the outcome for ORG and Game Changer 20 Limited is Ipswich gets promoted twice and is stable in the Premier League and is then a saleable commodity to someone else with maybe deeper pockets. Does that worry you as compared to Marcus Evans or not?
Well, I guess firstly to any firemen in Arizona who are watching, we've got this, right?
We've got it covered, don't worry.
We're all in the same boat, in a way. Does it? I mean, it's definitely something that when you hear it, it rings an alarm bell or two. But when you look into it, I think, and I'm no pensions funds expert, but I think pension funds mainly invest in a fairly low risk way, and then maybe in the remaining chunk go for a bit of high risk stuff that, you know, if it does well, it could totally blow, as Town could if they got from League One to the top flight. And if it doesn't do so well, then it's probably not going to make too much of a dent. That's how I understand it anyway. I don't have the impression, and again, this is from my fag packet knowledge of pension funds, I don't necessarily think these things are put in place just for a quick 2 or 3 years. I think they can and often are longer term than that. So I don't really think there's a risk of a sort of 2 or 3 year timeline of sort of get up or get out kind of thing from these guys. I can understand why there is a few raised eyebrows behind it, and it's a bit of a leap into the unknown for everybody. And obviously at the end of the day, for all that we can talk about Brett Johnson and Game Changer and that kind of thing, we're kind of at the behest of Ed Schwartz and ORG and what they want to keep doing. And Ed Schwartz is someone I'm pretty sure we're not going to see or hear that much of. So there will be that looming, especially for as long as Town are flapping around in League One or even lower half Championship. That is inescapable. You sort of have to take it on trust, don't you? And it goes back for me to the fact that Marcus has had these 40 approaches before and he's chosen this one and chosen to stay closely involved. And I just don't think, for all the mistakes that have been made in the Evans tenure, that he would be picking someone. And I don't think the EFL would be ratifying someone or some entity that was going to crash and burn Town in 5, 6, 7 years. How much money they're willing to put in, we'll just have to see. I get the impression that if things go well quite quickly, a lot of money could be put in, and it could be a very exciting time. I really think that. I think if Town were to get up to the Championship in the next year, let's say, I don't think it's going to happen this year, and then start challenging, I think it could be hold on to your hats time, honestly.
And that was what Marcus Evans was hoping when he came in, you know, Jim McGilton, and then Roy Keane got quite a lot of transfer kitty that slowly was whittled away, wasn't it? And if you do break that kind of glass ceiling to the Premier League, then the riches are there, isn't it? Even in respect to parachute money, as Norwich City know all about. So, yeah, it does feel that, you know, there's a few hurdles to get over. But if I'm ORG or Ed Schwartz, I'm kind of thinking, yeah, there's a big opportunity here.
They do have deeper pockets or deeper potential resources than Marcus Evans ever had. I think that's fair to say. And it will be about how they choose to deploy them and how maybe over the first few years they perceive the return they're getting. But I mean, in terms of risk versus reward for them, I'm not convinced the risk is that big. Even when you look at the losses Town make, when you look at the size of a pension fund, it runs into billions and billions. But the reward getting town up from where they are now is potentially absolutely huge. So from their perspective, I kind of get it. And it also incentivizes them to run the club in such a way that it has to happen, or it has to be the best possible chance of it happening. So I do expect big investment in infrastructure, in personnel, in people, in sort of ways that making marginal gains off the pitch, as we spoke about earlier, and that kind of thing. And I think they're going to give it a hell of a shot. I also think, from listening to Bert Johnson and speaking with him a bit in a Zoom a couple of days ago, that they are realistic, and they do know that Town are a League One club that is, I mean, again, I'm 85-90% sure not going anywhere this season, and that, you know, it's, I mean, you can't just spend your way out in a year. I think they've got a realism that this could take time, but I think they're determined to do it.
I was going to say, and this is, I guess, going back to Marcus Evans, this is what kind of what you prefer and expect from a football owner, which is to be, is to put the money in, and but not to be seen, to not be micromanaging, to not need to be there today, day to day. So for Game Changer and ORG to have that ownership structure that leans on the likes of Mike O'Leary and whoever this chief exec is to be the face, I think is reassuring. But as you said, you were part of the 1 hour press conference on Wednesday night, was it? Mike O'Leary and Brett Johnson gave their early views. You must have, all of us have come away reassured. How is it for you putting a question to Brett Johnson and seeing the whites of his eyes, as it was, when he gave you his answer?
I enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. It came across very well. Like, I mean, I guess as a baseline, you would expect enthusiasm and energy from a new owner or part owner in that kind of situation. But it was underpinned by, I felt, a knowledge of English football, a love and reverence for English football, a knowledge of football. And I think what is good about these guys is that they have built up a club at Phoenix, admittedly from zero, and that's not what you're doing here. You're trying to turn a tanker around here, so it is different. But they built up a club and, you know, established a culture where, as he said in a couple of answers to questions, people do want to come and play for them and enjoy the environment. So I think his experience in the football business shone through, and his more textured knowledge than maybe some people would have expected of the environment here as well. I know, great talker, good front man as well. Like, he's clearly been picked as the, or put himself forward, whatever, as front man for Game Changer for a reason. He's very personable, good communicator, really good communicator. I think we'll be seeing a fair amount of him, whether it's on Zoom stuff or later on in trips when it permits to the UK. I think he plans to be quite visible. And I came away very impressed. And, you know, you don't want to sound like you're eulogising about something where the future is so unknown.
The cult of Johnson.
Totally. And you know, we're all guilty of drinking Kool-Aid sometimes. And, you know, I thought that, as I say, I thought, admittedly, based on a bit more than first impressions, that Paul Lambert was going to be fantastic at Town, and look what happened. But from my experience of these things, I got a good feeling. I don't think these guys are coming in on zero knowledge. I don't think their chances. I don't think they woke up one day and thought, I want to work in an English football club. I think they thought about this. I think they've got a good network, good connections, good knowledge, good vision, good idea of how they want to do it. And I came away reassured and enthusiastic.
And it sounds like there's a team there. Whilst Brett Johnson might be the face of at least the American arm of Game Changer, and there's Burke Bakay, is it? And is it Mark Detmer as well?
Yeah,
they appear to have a really important contribution made to Phoenix Rising as well, and Tucson as well. So that'll be interesting knowledge. And let's be honest, Ipswich is Marcus Evans' ability to sweat our assets for revenue. You know, there was chat, you know, every now and then, of, oh, let's sponsor the stadium. And I know folks will, that will put people off, but there's more to getting the most out of the stadium than sticking a sponsor's logo on it. And you know, Brett Johnson has been pretty clear before, when he was speaking about Phoenix, how important the stadium is to the community, and using it on non-match days. And so I think that would be a great start as well. And what was your thoughts on Mike O'Leary? I think kind of understated, but very knowledgeable, clearly in control of things as well. I was quite impressed with him too.
Yeah, good speaker. There was something a little bit more old school about him, and I don't mean that in any sort of pejorative sense. I felt there was a composure and a sort of statesman-like manner about him. He's obviously been involved in the game on and off, I would say, for a long time. But also, like, he's involved and been involved, I think, in many businesses, a lot of different tech companies and stuff like that. I don't think he's a man out of time or anything like that. I thought he came across well. He's clearly not going to be doing this sort of nuts and bolts on the ground every day. Someone's going to come in and do that. I think as a conduit for everything in a sort of non-exec role, linking together the US side and whoever is chief exec and whatever else needs going on, I think he came across well, talked well, seemed to know a lot about the club, had a few good stories about watching the FA Cup semi-final in 1978 as a Baggy fan. He was able to reel out a lot of the town side, seemed to have a genuine appreciation for town. Had a good record, I think, at West Brom. I've not delved intricately into it, but people tell me he was liked and respected, and certainly helped to push them where they are now. And I think also he's a realist. I think he'll go about things fairly cautiously and strategically. He was talking, just going to your point about the stadium. I think there was a question about developing that and this and that. And I think there's always a danger that people think with a takeover like this one, that within 6 months, we're going to see the Portman Road Arena glistening and beautiful and, entertainment and this and that here and there. Not going to happen, I don't think. I think he pointed out that it took several years at West Brom to manicure the Hawthorns, which definitely needed it. I remember from going there in my late 90s and early 2000s. But I think their priority is going to be to put money into the team.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Which would make sense, wouldn't it?
Now that you could circle back and say that a bit of the problem with Marcus Evans was that he would pay often decent-ish wages, but the rest of the club was neglected. I think that is a mistake these guys won't make, and I think they've got the resources to put that structure in place. But it was quite clear that for the moment, the priority is a competitive team that can get up, and then maybe the, I don't want to say cosmetics, but the surrounding stuff will be sort of second in the queue.
Yeah, and the good thing, I guess, is I think stadium repairs or upkeep is exempt from FFP laws, perhaps, or something like that, along with the academy. Yeah. So if there's money there, then that's handy, I guess. And, the thing is that Marcus Evans really failed to do, and I've spoken to folks at the club about this, is really is to underestimate the optimism or the sentimentalism of football fans. You know, if the ownership shows a drive and determination to succeed, then supporters generally line up behind that and as a result spend more money, you know. And so I'm not surprised the season ticket announcement, which was expected yesterday, was pulled, because I wouldn't be surprised if something more creative, hopefully, is in the pipeline. And it kind of, again, feels win-win. You know, you show commitment off the field to make the match day experience more improved. More people, more families, more kids will want to go. It just seems that Marcus Evans really didn't get that. And hopefully these guys will.
And that's what it sounds like they've created in Phoenix so far. I mean, again, club with a new 10,000-ish capacity stadium in a huge city, so you can't sort of say they've tapped in the whole community. I mean, Ipswich is a much more compact and small place, but they've definitely, from what I'm told, really reached out there and got a good community presence and got people packing in. And I think, okay, maybe there wasn't the cynicism in Phoenix that there is in Ipswich, and a sort of sense of being knocked back so many times over the years. But I think they will come up with stuff that appeals to people. I think they have got a lot of sharp commercial acumen there. I think that will be something that they try and leverage. But again, more in the medium term, and hopefully they get bums on seats. And I hope as a fan, really, I hope everyone treats this as a sort of blank slate. A lot has happened. A lot has happened in the past dozen years, and it's been rough in a ITFC context for everybody. A lot of punches, but I think this is a zero point from which everyone needs to give it a clean slate, start again. If you're lucky enough to be able to afford it, get that season ticket. See what's going to happen on this ride, because I think these people are ready to go and ready to make something happen.
Hear, hear. Very much endorse that message. And you know, the big summer coming up of contracts, we've got a question about that, which is why I've gone to the phone. Paul Cook coming in. And as you said, you know, there's some baggage, some psychological baggage that surrounded the club with the current structure. That's kind of gone now. We kind of need to move on, don't we? And hopefully that psychological boost might not happen this season, but hopefully next will lead to good things. Let's go to the questions. Thanks to everyone who posted a question on our Twitter. I'll start with Steve. What are your thoughts on the possibility of Mark Ashton becoming our CEO? He mentions his popularity or lack thereof at Bristol City. Thoughts on Mark Ashton? It's been mentioned quite a few times, hasn't it?
It has. And firstly, Steve, thanks for your question. I know from the Bristol end that Ashton has been pretty much sidestepping any questions about this when anyone tries to doorstep him on it is what I hear. So whether or not this is live, and it's fair to say he's the front runner, I think, of what I'm sure are several candidates, we will see. You talk to people at Bristol City or around that club and it's mixed. I think the sense is he did very well early on in the transfer market especially, and things have sort of turned a bit sour, if you like, since he made the decision to appoint Dean Holden, who was the sort of inexperienced assistant manager last summer, wasn't it? And there was a bit of a sense that maybe he was involving himself too much in certain things. Again, this isn't my opinion, but it's the sense that people have conveyed. Maybe a sense that he got a bit too hands-on, and then obviously he's appointed Nigel Pearson, and they're still in a bit above it, I think, in the table, definitely comparative to where they want to be. I don't know enough about his methods. I don't know enough about what specifically is, you know, positive and negative about how he works. What I do know is that an experienced CEO in football is needed. He is that. Talking about CEOs before, then Marcus dispensed with that kind of role, and there was clearly a big void where some serious on the ground leadership should be. Simon Clegg obviously didn't have that football experience. Ian Milne, lovely guy, good at engaging with people, but maybe not either. So someone who's got that clout and gravitas of having worked for a club like Bristol City, which is a big club, and other clubs before, could do well in the right structure. I would say, without commenting on Ashton specifically, somebody of that profile, somebody with that kind of experience, whether or not it's him, is definitely required to push this project forward. And I'm very glad that it seems to be an absolute priority of the owners. And I think they expect to get something with somebody tied up pretty soon.
Maybe Stuart Webber fancies a new project. Who knows? Kate Riley, who is familiar to you, I'm sure. How much of a clear out does Nick think will happen over the summer? Not specifically of anything, not players or no one else has mentioned. How much of a clear out is there going to be, Nick?
Yeah, thanks for your question, Kate. Clear out. Look, I mean, I've been saying this for a few weeks, and I think many people have. There's got to be a massive exodus. I think there has to be because of the number of players out of contract. If I'm being really harsh, I'll probably only keep three or four of them. Now that's not realistic. I'm sure we'll see a few more staying, but I think Andre Dezel could still thrive in the right environment. I think Flynn Downs would still thrive in the right environment. Teddy Bishop, if you got him in a position on the pitch where that was his role and that was it, would thrive in the right environment. Kane Vincent Young, if fit, would thrive as well. That apart, I don't feel too sentimental. And it's not a personal thing because, from what you hear coming out, and I'm not there on a daily, weekly, or even monthly basis, but from what you hear, it's a decent set of guys. But I just think there's been a cloud hanging over the place for so long, now an expectation that things are going to go wrong or not quite be up to the mark, or that we can't keep up with others and that failure is almost pre-written. That it does become a mental aspect in people. It would for you, it would for me, it would in any job or in any aspect of your life. So I just think a bit of a purge, a bit of a flushing out is needed, except for four or five key bodies. I'm sure it will happen. You can listen to Paul Cook, and Paul Cook, who often says, "I don't want to say anything about this," and then kind of says it. You know, in terms of the massive rebuild and restructuring that's needed. So, you know, I would thank these guys for trying, which they have, but I wouldn't shed a tear for too many of them. I think it'd be a massive shame if we saw Andre Dezel in particular or Flynn Downs leave Ipswich in this kind of state without having done anything really at town, achieved anything, driven forward with them. Those are the two that I'd hang my hat on. I'd give Luke Chambers some kind of role. I know he's for some reason still a bit divisive among some people, but in terms of captain material, loving the club, knowing the club, you do need these people. You can't just take over a club and get rid of everyone who knows it and is part of the furniture, and I don't think they'll make that mistake. So hopefully that there's a role for Chambers somewhere, even if it's not at right back or even centre back.
He'd be great in an ambassadorial role, kind of like Simon Milton did, and then he grew into more and more kind of senior roles in the club. Apologies to, I might need to listen to this back. I don't know if I called Kate O'Reilly or Kate Riley. If I did say O'Reilly, I apologise, Kate. It's only because Jonathan Cook's next question is, how confident are we that Mike O'Leary, and I might have just merged those two names together, so apologies if I did do that. I'm struggling mentally, Nick, I'm all over the place. How confident are we that Mike O'Leary will find a top CEO, surely a critical aspect of future success?
Again, Jonathan, thank you for the question. He seems confident. Talking to him the other day, it seems like he knows what he wants to do, and an appointment will be down the track. He said there were candidates plural. Now, again, we don't know if Mark Ashton is a done deal or not, but I'm sure he is among them. Again, O'Leary's got a lot of contacts in football, been around a long time. I'm sure he'll recruit someone who he thinks has got the right experience and profile. And again, we are talking gravitas and also ability to be a front man and communicate on behalf of the club, even in boardrooms and directors' boxes and stuff, which is very important, I think. And I think a bit of that maybe rapport with other clubs has maybe drifted away from town in recent years. So you need somebody who, as well as having the business knowledge, can sort of get along with people, you know. I think hopefully he is aware that these everything's town need, and I mean, from listening to him the other day, I was quite confident that he knows what he wants to do, and I think I don't think it'll be too long before they unveil something.
Great. Just a little bit of flip side from Kate's question from Peckham Blue. Do you think we can expect to see an upturn in performance from the players now this is all confirmed, or have they downed tools knowing they're unlikely not to be here next season?
I'm always a little bit... I get a bit frustrated. I'm sorry, thank you again for the question. I never like to say players have downed tools or given up or stuff like that. Sometimes that, you sometimes see it, and it has happened. Most of the time, I think footballers, whoever they are, do want to do a good job. You're playing for your next contract. You're playing for this. You're playing for that. You are a professional, and like you, like me, like anyone, you're turning up for work, and you're not wanting to screw up, are you? So I don't think they're all going to be coming in on Saturday against MK Dons thinking, right, I'm not going to be here. There'll be people who like the sound of what they've heard from Brett Johnson, and quite rightly thinking, I wouldn't mind being a part of this. Let's have a go. So I think, I mean, there's the subconscious impact, I guess, sometimes of, maybe I might not be here, and maybe you get a bit tentative or whatever, but I don't think players consciously check out in that kind of way. And from dealing with a lot of footballers in my work and often asking them questions about processes like that, I think things can affect you subconsciously, but maybe consciously you don't come in thinking, I'm not going to try today. I'm not going to try and string 10 passes together to beat MK Dons, which would be quite an achievement, wouldn't it? So, yeah. I don't know what the impact will be, but I don't think they're going to be downing tools sort of en masse, sitting down thinking, right, that's it. I don't know if that's a very helpful answer whatsoever.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because, you know, the Paul Cook's introduction hasn't really yielded the kind of points return that we would have expected, that you've seen with the Cowleys at Portsmouth. But the reasons for that, I presume, are multifaceted more than contracts, possibly. You know, there is, I've been trained to do a certain thing in a certain way, and now that has totally been stripped away, and I'm having to learn my position from scratch. You know, it's a different voice. It's a Scouse voice with different vocal cords that go up and down. You know, it's a challenge. And obviously the off-field stuff, I think it's pretty common knowledge that the players didn't find out that it was formalised until pretty much the same time we did. So, you know, what we don't want is MK Dons to be a damp squib. Hopefully there'll be something to, you know, to build on there, but playoffs probably seems a bit of a stretch.
I think it's important that people take the sort of medium to long-term view for what it is. And if Town now get 2 points from the rest of their games this season, people don't start thinking, oh goodness, Brett Johnson game changers, it's all going wrong. This is very much something, the fruits of which we are not going to see until hopefully on the pitch next season and off the pitch beyond. So I would just say, Don't let the next month blow you off course.
And I think that was always the case anyway, even if the takeover hadn't happened for Paul Cook. You know, I think there's a lot of people quite quick to, you know, quite rightly, quite fairly, to ask what has changed or what has improved, because it's very difficult to see much. But yeah, you're right. It's the idea that things, fundamental problems, are solved overnight, even with the playing staff. It just doesn't happen, does it? Two questions that I want to merge together. One from Tom Agate. How will FFP affect our ability to splash the dollar, in his quotes? And then Mark W. What league rule limitations, whatever they are currently, could limit our ambition for a quick rebuild and promotion next season? And he adds, given we'd practically need a whole new first 11. Not that I think transfer fees are particularly important this summer, as we keep saying, in League One with the number of contracts expired. But any kind of legal limitations, squad limits that EFL and the PFA have been debating that might stifle our ability to succeed?
I don't know of anything that's coming immediately down the track. And I think, you know, very fortunate that the salary cap situation has been put on the shelf for now, as I understand it. It's funny. I was talking to somebody else about a month ago who was involved with a group that at one time might potentially have been interested in sounding Evans out about Town, although it hasn't got to that or needed to get to that. And that person got back onto me and said, "Oh, thank goodness about the salary cap. Nothing, you know, there'd be a lot of trouble getting something through if that was in place." So I think now that isn't in action, I think in the context of what Town need to do, it should be okay, frankly, over this summer. But a lot of dealing is required. And you see, my biggest concern from a fan point of view is hopefully getting Sunderland out of that division, because they've got a lot of money to spend, and I think they're quite happy to spend it. I've seen and heard £60 million mentioned here and there from Kyle Louis-Dreyfus. They're getting the recruitment guy, I think, from Blackburn for a big salary, who has done a very good job there. They're doing what I think Game Changer might do, and sorry, this is a bit tangential. They're spending a lot of money on good people, knowing that if good people make the right decisions, then that minimises or mitigates any outlay you've made in doing that. And I think Game Changer might go down a similar route.
Fingers crossed. Final question from Jason. Do you think the takeover will see ITFC step back from taking loans? And equally, can you see us making an offer for any of the current youngsters on loan with us?
Again, I think loans now are an inescapable part of life, especially where Town are. You're always only going to get loans, and unless your squad's packed with them, it's fine. I mean, it's only if you get in a situation where Town have been in, where you've got too many to fill the bench, which we were told would never happen again.
Yeah, you panic in January, don't you? Like we've done twice now.
For me, again, fag packet, but three good season-long loans, maybe two, if they're very good, is excellent in a squad. And I fully see that happening again. I think Paul Cook is, you know, whether or not, and there will be, but whether or not there are changes in how Town recruit in terms of data and analysis, this pre-season he's going to be restricted still to the domestic market and probably the lower league market. You're not going to be casting your net abroad, partly because of the regulations now mean that you can only bring in a certain calibre of player. So I think he's going to have to look at the loan market. If you're talking about the current guys, it's very difficult because a lot of them have been sort of flung in together, much like when Paul Hurst brought in too many lower division players at once. And you think one or two of these guys could probably do well in a good team with experience alongside them in a functioning unit. I think Mark McGuinness could be good with another year. I know it frustrates people, but I think Keenan Bennett has got something, definitely. I'd be quite interested to see what he could do when fit for another year. So you wouldn't say no to having either of those guys back. So
Luke Matheson, he's not really featured much.
Yeah, like him, and he was very good when he first broke through as a 16-year-old, wasn't he, at Rochdale? But the jury's out for me on that. But I think McGuinness and Bennett have good potential. Whether we see any of them back in practice, I think it's unlikely.
I think Cook's going to have his shopping list, isn't he? Let's be honest, which may or may not include anyone online at the moment. That's the end of the questions. Thank you, everyone, for those. Nick, thank you for answering them your insights and your positivity to the future. Looking to the immediate future, can I put you on the rack for a prediction for MK Dons on Saturday?
1-1. MK are a bit of a mixed bag, aren't they? We saw they got beaten quite comfortably by Crewe the other week, but they're the kind of team that Town don't do that well against. They keep the ball. I think they got the third best passing stats in Europe or something ridiculous like that. Russell Martin, really, really good young manager.
He'd love to beat us as well, wouldn't he?
Yeah, oh, he would. And got them very definite structure there. They play in a way that actually I haven't seen too often at this level, or some of the interplays they do. And I think they'll make it very tough. And I think it's a game that Town need to win. And if they win, suddenly you're thinking, hold on. But just can't quite see it, I'm afraid. I don't think they'll have enough of the ball. And Town are not a very efficient team. But I think a point is possible.
Yeah, I'm just hot off the press while we're recording. This is Friday. It seems like the rumours about Mark Ashton are only increasing. So we'll have to see how that. You've already given a bit of a take on him. We obviously don't know too much there, but that's obviously news that might, as the day goes on and when this comes out, it might have developed a bit more.
That does not surprise me at all. So we shall see how that goes.
Thanks, Nick. Where can we find you on Twitter and all that?
Oh yeah, no, I'm on Twitter, Nick Ames 82. You can find me on there.
And this weekend, you said you're covering Fulham Wolves.
Yeah, I'm at Fulham Wolves tonight. I'm at Brighton on Monday. Emirates last night, and I can tell you that covering Arsenal is just as frustrating as supporting Ipswich. So yeah, highly caffeinated this morning, and hopefully get a peek of the iFollow tomorrow afternoon. Although I might need a bit of a break at some point.
Have a bit of a break, yeah. I think one all is a good prediction. It's not. I don't think it's going to be a 5-all, but we'll see. Nick, thanks again. We'll do a couple of quick plugs. Obviously, we've got our we're sponsored for the rest of the season by our friends at Favourite Chicken. If you're into chicken, these are options in London for you. Though I think the discount that we've got, which is BM20, if you enter the code at the checkout, gets you 20% off orders over £10. Give that a look. If you're interested in Terrace Life and their merchandise, we've got a referral link where you can buy stuff. I think they've got a US flag with Ipswich Town badges as the stars, which is as a mug. So why not treat yourself to one of those? You can find us at Blue Monday ITFC. You can find me at Ipswich. Ben is back for the flagship show on the weekend. And I think he's been joined by Dave and Seb. And that's it. Nick, I will let you, if you want, have the final word. You can give us a kind of a rallying cry for the summer and season to come.
I just echo what I said earlier, really, which is that, you know, first impressions of these guys are very positive. I think the only way for everyone involved with Ipswich now to make this work is to be on the same page, to treat it as a brand new start, as hack or cliche as that might seem, a blank piece of paper, a new start, one where we maybe park our past disappointment and the weight of frustration that has piled on, and just get behind it. And like I said, if you do have the resources to get a season ticket or do something like that, try and do it, and let's all start and see where this goes, because I think these guys have got a good plan.
Thanks for watching or listening to the Blue Monday podcast. And thanks to those of you who have kindly supported the channel via Acast or YouTube donations. You can follow us at the usual places on social media, and don't forget to subscribe so that you get our new shows first.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.